Welcome to Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday. With your host, Jaguars.com Senior Editor Vic Ketchman. Jaguars Monday on News Talk Radio WOKV is brought to you by Community First Credit Union, Prudential Network Realty, the Jacksonville Transportation Group, Baptist Health, and by Ticket Exchange. Now, here's your host, the always happy, always positive, always effervescent, man of a thousand smiles, Vic Ketchman.
Good evening, everyone, and yes, it is a very good evening, and I expect this to be a great show because we have got so much meat on the bone following the Jaguars' 24-22 win over the Jets yesterday, and I'm not even talking about what happened on the field. I'm talking mostly about what happened on the sideline, along the sideline, with about 2 minutes to play in the game or thereabouts, and during a timeout when Jack Del Rio told Maurice Jones-Drew, and I quote, "When you pop through the line and you get to the 1 yard, line, fall down." And Coach Del Rio was anticipating, and accurately anticipated, that Rex Ryan was telling his team on the sideline, "Let him score." All of this has so completely captivated the American football fans that every talk show, every radio or every TV talk show, every sports broadcast today that I have heard, and I'm sure everyone that I haven't heard, is leading off with this stuff. They're leading off with, unfortunately, Jack Del Rio has been overshadowed by Coach Bill Belichick. Here's poor Jack Del Rio, who is famous for his genius strategy, yet he has been overshadowed and will always, genius will always be overshadowed by blunders, by gaffes. And what Bill Belichick did yesterday is without a doubt the absolute dumbest thing I have ever seen a coach do on a football field. It replaces something that happened 34 years ago, and I may talk about that a little bit later if someone wants to know what the previous dumbest thing I ever saw a coach do was, and it won a Super Bowl, by the way. But so it goes to show you that dumb things can succeed. But I don't know what Bill Belichick was thinking. We're going to get into that a little bit, and of course you're going to be invited to call the show because I know that you are just dying to talk about this. The whole world is dying to talk about this. In the day and age of Madden, people are plugging this information into their video game, and the video game is catching fire. It's exploding. It can't handle this kind of boldness. Coach Del Rio talked this afternoon in his press conference about books get updated. You know, the book changes, meaning the way that things used to be done gets changed. But I got to tell you, he's the one who updated the book yesterday. Gene Smith, the Jaguars general manager, is with me. Gene Smith, have you ever seen anybody do what your coach did yesterday?
Well, I've seen some people try to do it. Certainly, it's not that obvious to the eye. When you don't have timeouts and you want to get the ball back, there are some teams that have instructed their defenders to allow a guy to score.
That's not what he did. Brian Westbrook kneeled down at the 1 or 2 yard line with a 4-point lead. That's the equivalent of a quarterback taking a knee. That's just victory celebration stuff. All right.
Right, but new age NFL. I think you'll see things like this because, like I said, I've seen it done defensively a number of times.
You know what? Your coach is famous today, and it's not such a bad thing. Because this is a franchise that is in desperate need of attention. This is a franchise that needs something on which it can hang its hat. This is a franchise that needs to create excitement within its own fan base. I'm not against it. I'll tell you something about Jack. I've known him now for 7 years, and he can be dramatic. And it ain't such a bad thing, especially in Jacksonville. We need a little bit of dramatic. Anyhow, folks, I do have Gene Smith with me here tonight for a few minutes, and I want to talk to him a little bit about many things, a little bit about many things. That's not likely. That doesn't fit. But anyhow, we'll try to make it fit. So you're, I mean, obviously you're okay with what your coach did. You won.
No question. It's a bottom line business in the NFL.
That's right.
And the players embraced it, and we were able to come away with a win. And that's what we set out to do going up there.
How about what Bill Belichick did, Gene? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, like I said, it's new age NFL, I think. You know, the old thought was defense controls the game, and mm-hmm. I think you see today that whoever has the ball last typically wins in our league. You got games coming down to, you know, a field goal, typically less than 7 points, and, you know, there's great balance in this league, and so you're trying to find competitive advantages to win, and I think the rules are more geared towards the offense in some respects, and I do think it's made it more of a fan-friendly league because of it.
Jack Del Rio said books get updated, meaning the book, quote-unquote, on professional football, which says you do this and you don't do that, has been updated, has been modernized, and it now says that what he did yesterday, which is to kill the clock and kick a walk-off game-winning field goal and not allow the other team to have the football back, as opposed to take the touchdown and play defense. The book to which he is referring, the New Age, the new NFL book, was updated, and I asked him this. Of course, he wouldn't answer it. I asked him, when was it updated? When was the last abridged edition? And so I'm asking you. I think it was. I'm going to let you answer. When was the book updated? When did the game
change? Well, in our case, yesterday. I would say this, though. You have two defensive-minded head coaches in Bill and Jack that understand.
Rex Ryan and Jack.
No. I'm talking about Bill and what he did.
Got you.
Yeah. He knows the importance of trying to keep possession of the football to the very end. Because, again, with the five-yard chuck rule, it's really allowed offenses to have precision passing games. I mean, there's good quarterbacks in this league, and where this league is different than, like, college and high school is until the ball is in the air in high school and in college, I mean, you can have contact. In the NFL, I mean, you got a shot within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage to disrupt timing, and after that, I mean, it's a game that the offense certainly has the advantage.
So we have two defensive-minded coach, two coaches, Bill Belichick and Jack Del Rio, who, and I'm quoting Jack Del Rio, he said he cut his teeth on defense. Well, he more than cut his teeth on it. I mean, I can't help but go back to Wayne Weaver's line when Jack was announced as head coach, no more 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and I thought to myself, huh? I thought to myself, do you mean 4 yards in a cloud of dust? I mean, because Jack Del Rio's a cloud of dust guy. We have two defensive-minded coaches whose strategies said, I don't want to play defense. What does that say? What does that say about the state of the game?
Well, it's an offensive league. Again, the rules are geared that way. And I think the ability for an offense to move the ball down the field late in the game, I think they understand that if you can keep possession of it until the very end, that's what you want to do.
Why didn't Bill Belichick run the ball on 3rd-and-2? He's got Robert Mathis. He's 190 pounds. I mean, why didn't he say, okay, we're going? Why didn't he make a decision there that this is going to be two downs, and go run?
Well, obviously I'm not their play caller, but you would like to think if they were planning on doing that, they would have taken two shots.
Was he flying by the seat of his pants?
Oh, I can't.
He was, and that's the problem.
Comment
there
on that, Vic, because I'm not inside of his head. But certainly, if it works, you know, they win the game, and it didn't work in this particular case.
We're going to go to a break, but before we go to a break, I'm going to say this. Now, this is a guy a few years ago we were comparing to Vince Lombardi. Vince Lombardi would not have gone for it on 4th and 2 at his own 28-yard line. Take us into a break, Joe.
You got it, Victor. Fans, be one of the first 10 people to buy a new Motorola Droid smartphone on Monday, November 23rd. That's next Monday. At the Verizon Wireless Store in Mandarin, Orange Park, Regency, or East Jacksonville, you get a free pair of tickets to the Jags-Texans game on December 6th. Real good stuff. Want to talk to Vic? Here's the number, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351, or if you're calling from out of town, 1-800-355-NFL-1. Jaguars Monday continues right here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Fans, this portion of Jaguars Monday is brought to you by North Florida's labor unions. A job done on time and on budget. That's the union way. Parents, you want your kids to meet Jaguars linebacker Darryl Smith? Real easy to do. Just visit Deli's at the corner of Atlantic and San Pablo tomorrow night from 5:30 to 6:30. Darryl's going to be there signing autographs, taking pictures. What a cool guy Darryl Smith is too, huh, Victor?
Yeah, he's a really good guy. Really good guy. There are better interviews in the locker room, but there aren't better guys. And we are favored with Gene Smith, general manager Gene Smith's company, for at least another, what we got, 10 minutes left? Yeah, another 10 minutes before we get to the bottom of the hour break, so we'll use it as efficiently as possible. And I want to talk to Gene, first of all, about his team, which is now 5-4. Gene, you're 5-4, and four of your next five games are at home. At home, people, at home. And good tickets are still available. All right, we'll get to that too. For your next five games, you're at home. You're 5-4. Are you a serious, legitimate playoff contender?
Well, I would think from our point of view, our players definitely feel we are a contender. But obviously, we've got a lot of work to do, and we're focused on the game this Sunday.
The Bills. Did you look at any tape of them today?
I did. Lewis Clark is our advanced scout, mm-hmm. and I certainly like to look at the upcoming opponent and study what they do. And I like to see how players develop in the NFL that I've done in college. So, you know, it's a team that's, you know, had some injuries, certainly, and I have a lot of respect for Dick Duran and Perry Fuel. I mean, I've worked with both those guys, and I feel very confident they'll come in here well prepared.
I was interested yesterday in a halftime adjustment the Jets made. They, in the second half, assigned Darrell Revis to Mike Sims-Walker exclusively, effectively recognizing Mike as the team's number one receiver. And this team hasn't had, despite all of its draft efforts, hasn't had a number one receiver, a true what you would call number one receiver since Jimmy Smith was in his prime. It now appears that, hey, when Rex Ryan says Mike Sims-Walker is a number one, is worthy of Darrell Revis's exclusive attention, that's good enough for me. Do you read that the same way?
Yes, and obviously Darrell Revis is one of the elite corners in the NFL, and it was a good matchup for Mike in the second half. It got him an opportunity to work against someone very similar to Rasheen Mathis, who he works against every day in practice.
I think, and this is my opinion, I think Revis is the best defensive player I've seen this year who's played against the Jaguars. He is a stupendous player, and Rex, in my opinion, Rex Ryan made a gross miscalculation going into that game. I think he underestimated Mike Sims-Walker, and it cost him. Well, cost him a 26-yard touchdown in the first half. If the Jaguars were going back there this weekend to play, you can bet your butt that Darrell Revis would be watching Mike Sims-Walker exclusively. And by the way, I was really impressed with what Dirk Koetter did with his game plan yesterday. And I like the adjustments he made in the second half to try to get Mike Sims-Walker free, putting him in motion. You know, when he had a guy in a slot inside him, and trying to rub off that guy, trying to rub off the corners. Didn't work. Revis is just too darn good. But Dirk Cutter knows what he's doing.
I think so. I think he's done a good job of trying to play to the strength of our players on offense.
And what's the strength? What's the strength of your offense?
Well, I think he's realized that, you know, when you got, you know, one of the best fullbacks, if not the best fullback, from a blocking perspective in the NFL, and you got a tight end that's got dominant traits as a blocker, and certainly got a running back that's one of the elite players in the league, and you got an offensive line that is starting to gel together, and then you got receivers on the outside, too, that can block, and they're now showing the ability to make plays that we can win inside and outside. And I think what he's trying to do is incorporate a commitment to the run game with the ability to win on the outside with a vertical passing game.
After the Tennessee game, I challenged, quote-unquote, challenged your quarterback, David Garrard, to stop the bad games. No more bad games. He's at a point in his career now where he's veteran enough to waver, to vacillate somewhere between good and very good. I think he's at the point now where, you know, the bad games should cease. And he's put together two good ones. Yesterday he did it at the most important time, crunch time. He was a star at crunch time, and that's when the real star quarterbacks define themselves. Where do you put your quarterback? Where does he stand in the league?
Well, certainly we like him a lot. I think all quarterbacks are measured on winning at the highest level, and David is certainly still striving to do that with our football team. But he shows the ability to make all the throws, especially like yesterday in much-needed situations where you got to put together a final drive and get down there and get points to win the game. And he's done that a number of times, and yesterday in particular. So I like what he's doing. Obviously, David is performing his best when he's given the opportunity to set his feet to throw. And when you can do that, you can throw the ball down the field. And so right now the offense is really coming together and doing a good job.
You started the season 0-2, and you got blown out in week two. So you went to Houston in week three, 0-2, and coming off a blowout, and things look pretty bad. Now you've won 5 of the last 7. Were you scared? Was there a point where you I mean, we all knew this was going to be a rebuilding type year, but you never want to fall completely flat on your face. Were you concerned after week two?
Well, I think you got to be mentally tough to play coach or scout in the NFL because there is an element of emotional up and downs that you really got to be able to contend with. But I always believe if you're going to enjoy the success, you got to be tough enough to handle the struggles. And so I knew it was not going to be easy, but I do have a lot of confidence in what we're doing as a staff. And I'm just happy to be sitting here right now with 5 wins.
Absolutely. In the time we have left, which is not much, I want to do a little rookie report here. Your two rookie tackles, Eugene Monroe and Evan Britton, at what level are they playing now?
Well, I think what you're seeing is they're both doing a good job of, I think, understanding who they're lined up against more so than maybe early in the year. I think they're starting to learn how to scout the opponent. There's a lot of things that a pass rusher can give away, whether it's by their stance or, you know, their mm-hmm. counter moves, some of the things that through film study will enable you to anticipate certain things. And so I think part of becoming a true pro is understanding who you're playing against through a lot of film study.
Terrence Knighton and Derek Cox, how about them? 2 third-round picks.
Well, Knighton has been dominant at times inside. Certainly he's a guy, if he's solo blocked, he's been disruptive. And then when he's been double teamed, he's been able to hold the point of attack. So he's done a good job inside of giving us, you know, a force like John Henderson to stuff the run. And then Derek on the outside, I think, again, it goes back to a lot of film study of the receivers he's going against. I think he's getting acclimated to life in the NFL. He faced a good menu of receivers early that I think he learned a lot from, and I think he's just improved every week in you know, different things from a technique standpoint, and again, having a good scouting report and the guy lining up across from him.
I'll take it from there, and let's get to this break that I have to get at the bottom of the hour. Gene, thank you so much for gracing us with your presence.
All right, gang, enter to win $50,000 towards your new home with Prudential Network Realty's Take It to the House drawing. Now, one winner is going to be chosen from each home game. You and the guests could win tickets, a parking pass, and a chance to win $50,000. Just log on to PrudentialNetworkRealty.com for all the details. Jaguars Monday, Vic Ketchman and you will return. But news is next on your flagship station for Jaguars football, News Talk Radio, WOKV. Only works if you push the button. Jaguars fans, your favorite teacher can be the Community First Credit Union Teacher of the Week. Now, your teacher can win club seats to a Jaguars home game. It's all part of First Down Touchdown Teachers. Visit communityfirstfl.org for all the details. This portion of Jaguars Monday brought to you by Best Buy. Remember to stop by the new Best Buy in the St. John's Town Center. You want to talk to Vic? Real easy to do. 355-NFL1. That's 355-6351. Outside the calling area, 1-800-355-NFL1.
Let's turn to the phone lines and let's talk to Lee in San Marco. Good evening, Lee.
Hello. Hi, Vic. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
I have a lot of confidence in Gene Smith. I think he's got the franchise headed in the right direction. What I really wanted to talk about was Bill Belichick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought it was kind of interesting. I have a friend who's lives up in New England, is a big Patriots fan, and actually is a neighbor of a couple of Patriots players. And, you know, if you remember in the Super Bowl against St. Louis, the you know, they won that by being physical with the St. Louis receivers, and then 2 years later won the AFC Championship game against Indianapolis en route to their second Super Bowl by being physical with Peyton Manning's receivers. Mm-hmm. However, now in the age of Polian, you know, he had an epiphany of sorts when they had that call on Ellis Hobbs for the pass interference.
Well, let's go back to something you said, because what you did was you took us to the moment when the game changed. That
yes.
That 2003, I think it was, AFC title game. Is the one where the Patriots defensive backs got physical with the Colts receivers and bumped and run with them all over the field. You know, beyond the 5 yards, there was contact beyond the 5 yard chuck zone, and that's what caused Polian to seek a major emphasis of the rules, a stricter interpretation of the rules. As part of this major emphasis of 2004, which I then think led to Peyton Manning having that record-breaking touchdown season. Yes. If my timeline is off, it's off by 1 year only.
No, I think your timeline is correct.
So what you did was that game, that AFC game where they muscled these the Colts receivers, is the game that changed the game. Now, the rules were in, but they weren't being enforced as strictly. And that game, that AFC title game, the 2003 AFC title game, caused Polian to whine and cry to the competition committee, of which he is a member. And ultimately, the league adopted this major emphasis because, oh, let's see, Mike Holmgren was on that competition committee, so he would have been in favor of anything that would have favored offense. Jeff Fisher was on that competition committee, and he favored it too, which kind of surprised me because he's a defensive guy. But it was loaded with offensive guys. It was loaded with people who knew the league wanted to see more points, more yards, more first downs, etc. And again, that was the game that changed the game. And now we are living in the wake of these changes. And I don't think anyone understood how dramatically this major emphasis of the enforcement of the Chuck rule and the further sissifying of the quarterback, how dramatically it would change the game. You know, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes I feel like these quarterbacks are playing against air. Sometimes I feel like we're watching OTAs, and I really mean that.
I think the Ellis Hobbs pass interference, phantom pass interference, face guarding call, or whatever they said, where he had his back to the ball but never made contact with the receiver, ended up being a critical call in the 2006 AFC title game.
Oh, that was just a gift. That was just a gift to the Colts. Give them their Super Bowl. You know, give Peyton Manning his ring so he doesn't, you know, go away as Dan Marino went away. That Ellis Hobbs call was just a blatant gift. Later after the season was over, the NFL officials department, Mike Pereira's director of officiating, Mike Pereira, issued an apology to Ellis Hobbs. According to Ellis Hobbs, he was told that that should not have been called. That was not pass interference. There is no face guarding rule in football.
Not in the
NFL. So, you know, that was just a gift to the Colts. But here we are. This is 2009. So we're 6 years after the major emphasis and of course, the further sissifying of the quarterback, contact with the quarterback. And let's not forget the helmet-to-helmet rule change on defenseless receivers, and that is a good thing. That is a good rule. But all of this, when you put all of this together, defenses are defenseless.
Well, I think that what you saw last night, while I disagree with the call, because I think eventually you're going to have to win games, particularly in the playoffs, when you don't have the ball last.
You're talking about the Jaguars or the Patriots?
Anybody.
Uh-huh.
You're going to have to win games at
I agree.
Some point. If you want to go to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, you're going to have to win a game sometime when you don't have the ball last. But I think it was Belichick's fear of Peyton Manning with the ball and that pass interference call or the roughing the passer or, you know, whatever. I think that was it was a reaction to that. And I don't agree with it with his – I'd have punted it, but I think that's what you're seeing.
Well, first of all, I think he should have run the ball on third down. Third and two. At that point, you have to know, are you going for it on fourth down? You can't fly by the seat of your pants here. You can't make your decision to go for it on fourth down after the third down play. You've got to know on third down whether you're going to go for it on fourth down if you miss, because that affects your playing calling. In my opinion, against the Colts, which is to say a defense that is ranked, hold on here.
Well, they were ranked one, but 14, I think fourteenth
against the run. Not bad, but nonetheless, they got Robert Mathis in the game. He's a 240-pound defensive end. Hey, run at him twice.
I think their defense was exposed a little bit last night, and I agree. I'd have run the ball, but I'd have punted also. So
yeah, so would I. And the other thing that the other mistake, and Belichick's not the only one who's made it, is when you get into these pass games, just up and down the field, you're tiring out your defensive players. You're tiring out all your players. You're gassing your players. His defense was gassed. They had nothing left in the tank late in the game. You've got to, a good coach manages the tempo. He controls the tempo of the game so that he keeps his players fresh. Hey, who doesn't know the formula for beating Peyton Manning is run the ball, control time of possession, and keep him on the bench.
Couldn't agree more. Thanks,
okay.
Vic.
Thanks. Let's take a break.
All right, Victor. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Just stop by Gate today. Want to talk to Vic? Real easy to do. 355-NFL1. 855-635-1. Jaguars Monday continues right here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Welcome back to Jaguars Monday on your flagship station for all things Jaguars, News Talk Radio, WOKV. The Jaguars Rewards Program is your ticket to discounts and savings from a lot of merchants in the greater Jacksonville area. Just save on things like Jaguars gear to money-saving offers at your favorite restaurants and a whole lot more. Just visit jaguars.com/rewards for more information. Victor?
Welcome back for the final 10 minutes of Jaguars Monday. Real good Monday. 5-4 kind of feel-good Monday.
And a different way to win. That'll get people talking.
This season is really becoming fun. I was so concerned when they started 0-2. Then, of course, coming back from Seattle, and then, of course, getting blown out in Tennessee. I was really concerned that this is going to be one of those 5-11 jobs, and you know, just a march to the end of the year. And what happens from a reporter's standpoint is, in those kinds of seasons, the players lose interest. They stop coming to the media hours, so to speak. They stop coming to the locker room to talk to reporters, and we get left with bare bones. I mean, you know, there's very little to grab onto. Well, after yesterday's game, there is lots to grab onto this week for reporters, and I hope it stays that way through the year, through the rest of the year. Let's talk to Trevor. He has a question. Good evening, Trevor.
How you doing, Vic?
Fine.
I just wanted to say what I thought was like the coolest part of the game yesterday was late in the game, like with when the Jaguars were driving and they've kind of blown a big lead. Two of the biggest catches on that drive were rookies, Mike Thomas and Zach Miller. And you know, Garrard looked like he had time throughout that whole drive, you know, so credit, like, I give a lot of credit to the offensive line. But, yeah, I just wanted to say that I thought the rookies played great, especially in crunch time.
Yeah, their rookie class is fantastic. It just gets better every week. You know, and here's the best thing about a young team is it tends to keep its legs fresh late in the year, whereas older teams, they lose their legs around Thanksgiving and they start to fade. This is a nice bunch they have here, and with some fix-ups, with some upgrades on defense next year, this team could really do something in 2010. I don't want to write off 09 yet, but you know, I think it is what it is, and I think the best it can be is for this team to be a playoff contender. That's as much as I can possibly force myself to expect. If this team was to somehow stay alive to the final week of the season, I will drop to my knees and thank somebody.
Yeah, no, it's true. And just out of curiosity, Vic, who do you see stepping up to fill in for Jared Diller? Do you see someone new, or do you see just more for Sims Walker and Corey Hull?
I don't know that they're desperately in need of anyone, desperately in need of replacing Jared Diller. You know, Zach Miller now looks like he's ready for an advanced role. If they were to advance somebody, it would appear that Tyquan Underwood is that guy, the seventh-round pick from Rutgers. I've been told that he's looked very good in practice and that he was right behind Dillard. That's not to say that Nate Hughes wouldn't get consideration, too, but I'm not privy to that information, other than to say that the information that I have gotten, and I haven't researched this specifically because the injury just occurred, but prior to the injury occurring, the reports that I was getting would suggest that Tyquan Underwood was next in line, or is next in line.
All right. Thanks a lot. Great show, Vic.
Sure. Thanks. Let's talk to Philip in Orange Park, who wants to talk about the 4-3 defense. Good evening, Philip.
How you doing, Vic? I want to thank you for taking my call. I read your column every day, but my question was, during the offseason, when Gene Smith, you know, goes back to working on the personnel, do you think he's going to try to get with Tucker and turn it into a 3-4, or he's going to stick with the 4-3?
He's going to get with the head coach, Jack Del Rio, and those two are going to decide what the future of this team is philosophically
right.
On defense. Now, a lot of things come into play there. You look at your personnel. You look at the personnel pool available in the upcoming draft. What are you going to have, 100 juniors enter the draft this year? or next year, almost certainly, a large contingent of juniors because of the CBA landscape. The fact that we're heading into a it's kind of do it now or you could be out. In the future, the rules could change and they might not favor rookie negotiation. So I think you're going to have a lot of guys who are going to try to come out and get in on this this motherload of this windfall of money the players got with this CBA the owners are in right now. So you'd look at the talent pool. Is it heavy with tweeners? Is it so heavy with tweeners that you can make that move to the 3-4, or is it heavy with conventional 4-3 defensive types? How many teams are playing the 4-3? How many teams are playing the 3-4? How will that affect the pool? So there's a lot that has to be decided. Frankly, I think they'll stick with the 4-3. Jack Del Rio is a 4-3 guy. Don't buy into this Mel Tucker is a 3-4 guy stuff. He coached under the 3-4. He coached in a 3-4 system in Cleveland most recently, but he was a 4-3 guy at Ohio State. He was a 4-3 guy for Nick Saban at Michigan State and at LSU. He's got lots of 4-3 background. And based on what I'm seeing right now, clearly this team's personnel fits a 4-3 better.
Well, and one other question I actually had to ask this time is this upcoming Buffalo game. I read online that I guess Mathis has an injury now. I mean, is this going to expose us? Are they going to be able to throw all over us now? I mean,
well,
it's a trap game for us.
Based on what Jack Del Rio said at today's press conference, he said that Rasheem Mathis' groin injury that he sustained yesterday could keep him out for a game or two. I think he said 1 or 2 weeks. Usually that means he's going to miss a couple of weeks, or at least his effectiveness will be curtailed for a couple of weeks. My expectation, when I hear something like that, my reporter instincts tell me that Rasheem Mathis will not play in the next two games. I don't think Jack Del Rio would say anything like that if that wasn't the truth. Coaches always tend to underestimate injuries. So I'm guessing this team is going to be without Rasheem Mathis at least this week against Buffalo. Is that a good thing? Heck no. It is not a good thing. It means that a decision has to be made as far as does Reggie Nelson come back to cornerback? You know, that didn't go so well against Tennessee. Or does Tyrone Brackenridge fit into that position? That'll be a question certainly we'll get into beginning with Wednesday. Okay? That's gonna do it for Jaguars Monday this week. Joe, are we up against the quit button here?
We are up against the quick button.
Then why don't you push it for me?
I will push it.
Thank you.
And remind folks that you'll be back Wednesday night with Jeff and with Brian for Jaguars this week. Brian will be here tomorrow with Jack Del Rio.
Good.
So keep it right here.
Thank you.
You got it. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Jaguars Monday with Vic Ketchman, brought to you by Prudential Network Realty. This is AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV.